Many people thought the Share Your Embarrassment tour was over, but it was just dormant. We are really excited to announce that right now, tickets are on sale for the streaming Cyboctacular. We filmed our Hollywood show last year, and it's going to be streaming starting May 16th and available for a couple of weeks after that to anyone that holds a ticket. And if you have a Max Fun membership, you can get your ticket at a discount. Just check your inbox for an email for Max Fun with that code. If you aren't and would like to see the show, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets today. These shows are really fun. We put a lot of work into high-quality production values. And if you get a VIP ticket, we can even meet face-to-face over the internet. Get your tickets today at greatestgentour.com, and we'll see you on May 16th.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica. Sounds like you're really rushing through that intro.
I just thought I'd like take a different swing at it than I normally do.
I love how we rush through the intro and drag our fucking asses over the end of this show. Like a dog dragging its ass on the carpet, we prolong the end of this show until it's like 10 minutes long.
Yeah, we got to get better at that.
How many credits do we need? We're a two-man operation.
I don't know. Well, we're a two-man operation with the brilliant folks at MaximumFun.org behind us now.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, you know who isn't backing us is Rod Roddenberry. You won't find any Roddenberry money funding this program, that's for sure.
Yeah, we don't have the stink of the robber baron Roddenberry family on us. This is an editorially independent program.
Yeah, and that's all I'm saying. Look, Rod Roddenberry is probably excellent. Like, I would love to roll with Rod Roddenberry, but I'll tell you one thing. I'm not taking any Roddenberry money for this program because we want to be free to make as much fun of the show as possible, sprinkle it with as many dick and fart jokes as we can. I don't think you can do that when you're accepting Roddenberry money.
You know what else the Roddenberrys probably wouldn't want us to talk about on our podcast is our personal stories of embarrassment surrounding Star Trek. And I was recently at home in the Bay Area, Adam, and I got to look through some of the pictures of me from my childhood. And I found some pretty funny ones. I think I sent you most of these on text message, but
yeah, I turned one into the image that shows up when you call me or text me.
That was a good choice. My favorite one is I'm standing in my parents' house in a Pogs t-shirt with a marionette of a starship that I built myself out of foam core construction board, and it's definitely a Federation ship, maybe like a similar model to Starship Voyager. And what I also found was a VHS tape that is labeled Star Trek 7 through 9. I'm almost positive that these are Star Trek films that I made with my friend Brian on his father's video camcorder after we saw Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, and wanted to make Star Trek films in his backyard.
Oh my God. Are you serious?
Yeah. So I have this tape in my house right now, and I'm going to see about getting it digitized and, If all goes well, I will play you some audio from the imagined Star Treks 7 through 9 that a young, from the look of it, 8 or 9 year old Benjamin Harrison directed.
Wow, your first directorial credit?
Probably not my first. We made a lot of backyard movies back in the day. But
yeah, you and me both.
Yeah.
That is awesome. The evidence of my youthful filmmaking has been destroyed. But
oh, that is such a shame. I was surprised that this tape still existed, and it may be just like taping Star Trek stuff off television or something. It's a little hard to tell.
Oh, I used to love doing that. I would make action movies out of other action movies.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we were pretty unsophisticated. I think, like, we made ships out of cardboard and foam core. We edited everything in camera, so we had to shoot in sequence.
Sure.
You know, and if a take didn't go well, we would, like, rewind and then, like, try to, like, get it just right to record over that part.
So pretty much exactly how we make videos now.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Hope none of our clients are listening.
I'm really impressed that you built these ships from scratch. I was always a plastic modeler.
You know, I never really got into, like, model kits, but I've definitely built my share of things from scratch like this. So, I don't know. Like, it's definitely, like, not the kind of fit and finish. I was probably, like, pretty disappointed in how this came out, but it kind of looks like, you know, those Sweeted movies from that Please Be Kind and Rewind movie.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that level of production value.
Oh, man. I can't wait to see this.
So I'll put a couple of these pics up on Twitter when this episode goes live and people can point and laugh at me.
That's a great get.
So shall we talk about our episode?
Speaking of poorly made videos, that doesn't work. That's not a good segue. That's too cruel.
Yeah, Mission Log would have done a much nicer segue.
Speaking of a real gamble on entertainment, we've got Season 2, Episode 12, The Royale.
Or as Sam Jackson would put it, The Royale with Cheese.
Yeah, pretty accurate here. Pretty cheesy.
This is a tasty burger.
Kind of a cheesy episode. So the Enterprise is they've gotten a tip about some debris from some Klingons, so they're going to go hunt it down, and they arrive at what gets described as a nasty planet to look for this debris, and it's a planet that you would never go to. It's in a real bad part of town.
It's another opportunity for Geordi to be disparaging about new life and new civilizations. Like in the same way he called Nagellum an ugly motherfucker, he's doing a scan of this planet and he couldn't be more negative on its qualities. He's negging this planet pretty hard.
Do you think maybe he's trying to set this planet up for sex? Like he just read some books about seduction techniques and...
Yeah, I actually do. I think that's pretty on brand with Geordi.
Yeah. As a real creepazoid, Geordi probably would be into the seduction community, wouldn't he? But, yeah, I mean, this is like an uninhabitable planet, but they do something that's real classic for an early TNG episode, which is they go down to the transporter room and they go, "We're going to beam some of this stuff aboard. It's got some markings on it." And Picard's like, "What kind of markings?" And Riker's like, "I don't know, but here we go."
like a fishing boat, like getting a body on board. Like I think we got a floater out there. Why don't we bring it on board?
Yeah.
What's the worst that could happen?
I mean, it'd be like if a political campaign had no vetting department. You know, you just get in, you just get involved with whoever wants to be involved. Let the press say what they will.
Yeah.
But they beam this thing on board, and it is a hull section from a NASA vessel, which doesn't make a lot of sense given how far they are from Earth and given what the year this ship must have come from, given its 52-star American flag.
And the current state of defunding of our nation's space program also.
Yeah. Let's take a minute to talk about the current state of defunding of our nation's space program, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, this scene actually broke the spell for me. It really bummed me out. Like, see this piece of NASA ship in the 24th century just kind of made me think about how impossible the idea of a space program surviving that long.
Yeah, like this is the third attempt at sending a ship beyond the border of our solar system, according to the dialogue, and we are not even close to trying something like that, and it's almost like a laughably far away thing to contemplate. Like we need 100 years of like normalized space travel before we're trying crazy shit like that, probably, right?
Yeah. Yeah, easily.
So, kind of a bummer.
Yeah, and what are those other two stars on the flag, you think?
Yeah. I mean, Puerto Rico, presumably.
The moon?
Yeah. Well, it's already a protectorate, right?
The moon and Uranus.
Nice. Well, if you're listening to this program and you're in the United States, write your congressperson and senator about expanding funding for space research.
Yeah, see if that works.
Probably won't. First duty of every Starfleet officer is to the truth, scientific truth, or historical truth, or personal truth. They find a building on the surface of this crazy, crazy planet, and this building is surrounded by a breathable atmosphere, despite the fact that the rest of the planet is just a bunch of swirling farts, essentially. And so they're like, God, this building and this ship, it like may be connected. Like, why don't we send a little away team down, poke around on the surface?
The same reasoning that results in them just beaming up random parts that like strange parts onto the ship without any sort of security measures is the same thinking that gets them to just beam a dustbuster club down to a totally environmentally hostile planet that just happens to have a weird bubble of atmosphere in it.
Yeah, you know, like, I feel like they would maybe start with, like, a test module, one of those things that they, like, you test the transporter with. Just beam that down, see how it does. But
this seems like a great mission for Data as the canary. Like,
yeah.
Canary Data down there. If all is well, then follow up with the rest of the Dustbuster Club.
Right. Data can breathe farts.
Yeah. Yeah, so they beam down there, and the visual is really weird.
Yeah.
Did you ever have Winamp in college?
No, but I had the iTunes visualizer, which is more or less similar.
Yeah, and like that is the effect, is the visualizer. It's like it's our Dustbuster Club is in black, like in sort of a black psych. Yeah. It's not a psych. It's just a black background situation.
Down into jet blackness with the iTunes visualizer swirling above their heads.
Yeah, that's the look. Pretty weird.
Yeah, and Data comments that storm is like, you know, less than a kilometer above them. And they're in contact with the ship, and there's just, like, there's nothing there. It's like they're standing on the black floor of the soundstage, and there's just nothing, except for a rotating revolving door, which has an R inscribed on it. And so, you know, the only thing to do is go through the door, right?
I was pretty impressed that they knew how to use a revolving door.
There was a moment when they walk up to it where it looks like Data is about to go in the same like section as Worf, which is that like awkward guy move where you're like, there's not really enough room for two people in here.
Yeah, Worf of all people seems like someone who would be totally confounded by a revolving door. When I was in Heathrow a couple days ago, this sweet old lady was totally confused by an escalator. Like, she put her bag on it, and the bag started to, like, drag her arm up.
Oh, no.
And she was real confused. I felt awful for her. And it seems like Worf would be in sort of the same scenario.
Worf has, like, struck a karate pose at the sight of the captain flipping his hat open.
Yeah.
So.
And yet operates a revolving door with aplomb.
Maybe it's a maybe the Klingons are fans of that particular design flourish. I mean, it's a very energy efficient way to have a point of egress to your building.
I love the idea of like a Klingon D7 old school battle cruiser, like with nothing but revolving doors in it. They're all super squeaky.
I think the Polish Navy used to do submarines like that.
How dare you? How dare you? You know I'm Polish. So we're going to a guest host format, I read, which I am really looking forward to. Two Poles talking about Star Trek. That's a format I can get behind.
I would almost quit just to hear that.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
So the Dustbuster Club goes through the revolving door, and on the other side is a pretty banging casino scene. Real lively.
Yeah.
Bunch of action.
Yeah. It's a lot. It's like, I mean, it's like an early James Bond film level of casino, where it's like a lot of, you know, beautiful people and like a lot of rollicking laughter and fun times going on, except for the room seems a little too small and a little bit too cheaply art directed to plausibly be a casino.
Well, that and like everyone's entirely too happy for it to be a plausible casino. Like, casinos are desperate, disappointing places with
well, they did have that one lady who was just like completely focused on the slot machine, which is accurate.
That was the most real part of the entire scene.
Yeah.
So like anyone going into a casino hotel, the Dustbuster Club approaches the front desk.
Sure. And there's a little scene playing out here between between the bellboy and the manager. Which I feel like is roughly normal for any hotel you go into. Bellboy and manager having general manager having a heated conversation.
They don't normally have to do with a bellboy murdering some guy, though, which is what this right. conversation's about.
Yeah, like this bellboy is real worked up about a guy named Mickey D. Is it Mickey D?
It is.
Which is I didn't really think of it when I was watching this, but that's the name of a famous Scottish restaurant.
Oh, God. This is getting worse and worse.
But so they get room keys.
I'm
going to...
I got to shoot the Whopper.
So they get room keys and some chips to gamble with, and they're like, let's like mingle around. And I think it's like around here when we get back up onto the bridge and they're trying to raise the away team and the away team is not responding. And then we go back to Riker and he's trying to raise the ship and they're not responding. Communications are out.
Wes is trying to contact them, but it's just going to Captain Picard every time.
Yeah. And he's like, no, I didn't mean the poo emoji right after the eggplant emoji. This thing's putting in stuff that I don't mean. But they go try the revolving door. They try to go out, and they come right back in, which is almost an interesting effect, except for if they'd comped it so that it looked like the second your foot exited the one side, it's coming in the other side, it would have been really cool.
Yeah.
But instead, it just looks like they're going through a revolving door and are too dumb to step out when they get to the outside.
Yeah, it's a total... It isn't even an effect. It's just a practical move. They just go all the way around the revolving door. And, I mean Worf is upset by this in the same way that he was upset on the Yamato inside Nagellum's asshole. Like, he does not like going into doors and then coming out on the other side in a place he isn't expecting.
Yeah. I mean, he also doesn't like doors that don't let him through, which we found out in that episode, The Neutral Zone, when he and Data found all those frozen people.
Unfortunately, this is the only Worf character building we've gotten in like 20 episodes. It's really sad.
My main thing is I hate frustrating door conundrums.
A revolving door. A warrior's door.
Maybe Worf is behind the whole no locks on the doors on the Enterprise. He's like, listen, if I'm going to be chief of security, I can't have any doors that give me any kind of guff, even the smallest amount.
Oh, man. God, they just gave Worf nothing to do in this episode.
Just kept talking in one long, incredibly unbroken sentence, moving from topic to topic so that no one had the chance to interrupt. It was really quite hypnotic.
So the desk guy gives them all chips and room keys and is like, yeah, go hang out in the casino. Go knock yourself out. So after trying out the revolving door, they decide to do a little gambling.
Yeah, there's a lot of fun and games in this episode. You know, Data sits down and starts playing blackjack with a cantankerous Texan who looks enough like he would be a peripheral character on Walker, Texas Ranger that he actually was a peripheral character on Walker, Texas Ranger.
Yep.
You're new around here, aren't you?
Yes, sir.
Sit down. I'm going to teach you how this game is played, boy.
And a buxom, curly-haired blonde lady who's, like, really playing the, like, the dumb broad character, which I found kind of offensive and tasteless.
Yeah.
Do I hit Texas or do I stand?
If you gotta win, you gotta hit.
Hit me.
I guess you can kind of, like, make a case for it in the context of this, all of these characters being characters from a trashy novel, but...
Yeah, that's why it played for me just fine, was that it was... Its source material was garbage.
Right. But it's like, why write an episode where the character's source material is going to be garbage?
I don't know. I couldn't stop thinking about, like, how great Data was going to be at blackjack.
Like the poker scene in the episode that preceded this by a couple of shows, we have to assume that Data is going to have some real ridiculous card based skills, because, you know, he can hold huge numbers in his head and do, like, massive amounts of calculations on the fly, you know, and that's sort of what people who go into casinos and count cards are doing, you know, like
yeah,
you could conceivably watch somebody shuffle a deck of cards and know what the order of the cards was before they shuffled it, and know what they were after they shuffled it. Like, that's the kind of visual acuity Data is working with, and it doesn't seem to serve
him.
Well,
and he's got the physical acuity too. Like, they allow him to cut the deck, and like a skilled magician, you know, aligning the cards in a deck for a card trick, I'm sure he could set up a deck that would be ideal for him.
Yeah,
on every deal.
Yeah, he's got, like...
This scene doesn't pay off at all for that reason, because they don't really draw it out in any way. It's exposition for the man in the cowboy hat, really.
Do you think they put a little makeup on Ricky Jay's arm and put it in a Data sleeve and did that card handling close-up?
Yeah, the...
legendary cardsman Ricky Jay?
Yeah, that deck split was pretty great looking.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Can you do anything like that?
No, I can just shuffle many decks at a time. Like, I could shuffle four decks into four decks pretty easily.
That's pretty cool.
But I don't know any card tricks.
Yeah.
I wish I did. I've got these real spindly fingers. I feel like they'd be good and dexterous for something like that, but...
Yeah, if only you'd been, like, training your hands since your childhood, like Ricky Jay did.
Yeah, I've been training my hands far differently since childhood.
You've been doing a lot of the come hither.
Extraordinary.
Well, Commander Riker is getting pretty freaked out that they can't get on the blower with the Enterprise, and Troy picks up on this. She she tells the captain that he's getting pretty tense, and the away team decides to explore the rest of the hotel, get off the casino floor and see what else is going on. And so they walk over to the elevator, and once again, Worf is confronted by a door that doesn't do what he expects it to do. And again, like the neutral zone, Data has to show him that there's a button just to the left that he could push, and it'll open just fine. And they go upstairs and find a crispy critter in one of the hotel rooms.
Yeah, that room's got a reek. Riker pulls the sheet off of him, and it's an astronaut that's been dead for like 200 years.
Yeah. And he's written his own little captain's log, basically saying that they, you know, they launched and everything was going great, and then an alien infected his ship, took the lives of his entire crew, and then realized what they had done. You know, didn't really like realize that they were dealing with a sentient species, and so they attempted to like create a environment that he could live in. Like, this is like a kid finding a bug on the ground and putting a leaf and a stick in a jar to recreate the habitat of the bug inside the jar. These aliens found this book and like recreated the characters from this essentially pulp novel that happened to be on board the ship.
It's a weird kind of Matrix story.
Yeah.
At least that's how it read to me. Like, the aliens kept him alive as sort of a guilt thing.
Yeah, and it's like the last entry in this log, and I found it like a little bit implausible that there would be a coherent final entry of somebody who's lived in this environment for 20 years. Like, it would drive you fucking crazy, right?
I guess I wanted to know more about how that world worked practically. Like, does he replay every day like Groundhog Day, you know, to the beats in the book? Or were those 30 years stretched, you know, like a page a day style over the end of his life? Like, either scenario I think would be insane making.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I would have held on to my sanity the way Colonel Stephen Ritchie of NASA did in his final log entry. But what they basically they find the book in the side table in the bedroom, and they find his like astronaut uniform, and finally like the ship the Enterprise like finds a way to penetrate this crazy shield, so they start to get communications back up, and they realize that the only way to get out of this situation is by completing the story of the novel, which is, to me, pretty much the craziest plot leap that we've ever had in the show.
Ever.
I mean, it like just doesn't follow logically, right? Like, oh, we'll just do the rest of the book and then we can go. Like, what do they have to base that on?
I guess, what else can they do?
I guess.
There's
but
nothing
like,
else to do. They can't leave. It sort of forces them into that
yeah.
task.
I mean, they're talking on the ship about like phasering a hole in the shield that's holding this all together and then beaming them out through that hole. And, you know, they'd have like 16 seconds to do it before Riker, Worf, and Data were cryonically frozen by the crazy atmosphere on this planet. And it's a gambit they're like legitimately considering, because it's like there are no obvious ways out. But they treat completing the story of the novel as like the obvious correct solution, which I feel like doesn't have any evidence to support it.
Yeah, everyone is really... I mean, for as much effort as we're made to think that the Enterprise crew is putting toward rescuing the Dustbuster Club, I mean, much of the time you see Picard just listening to the away team like a book on tape. Like, he's just in his ready room listening, occasionally turning the volume down when it gets boring. Like, it's oddly passive.
Yeah, it's a real strange... I mean, like, Picard is like, yeah, we'll stay here as long as it takes, but it's like, maybe maybe don't stay as long as it takes and, like, get urgent about saving these people.
Yeah, it's real weird. So, like, as the book plays out, we finally meet Mickey D, who is who walks through the revolving door, real cocksure and wearing just sort of a sartorial Holocaust suit. Like, it is the baggiest white suit I think ever depicted on television.
They definitely, like, disassembled one of the Romulan uniforms from the last episode and reused the shoulder pad part. It's a hot mess.
It is pajama bottom, dumpy.
It's like, I mean, it's sort of like the suit in The Mask, but not played for a joke.
Oh yeah, that's a great call. You know, I actually had to look up the actor to make sure it wasn't Peter North.
The decorator?
No.
I don't know who that is, Adam.
Yeah, it wasn't him.
I mean, he is bringing a similar level of thespian chops to the role. But
he straight up murders the bellboy.
Yeah. Shoots him in the back. You know, he's supposed to be kind of like a Vegas gangster type character.
A murder scene would play out in any casino, like, no one is fazed at all. They watch a kid get killed and then they go back to the slots.
Yeah, they're there to gamble.
Yeah.
And the away team decides that they are the foreign investors that get mentioned in the book. So their plan is to, despite the fact that somebody's just been killed, not give any fucks about that storyline and gamble until they are rich enough to buy the hotel. And so,
like a bunch of college kids who get it in their heads that they're going to play enough blackjack to win a comped hotel room. They're like, yeah, we can just win enough money at craps to buy the hotel.
So, and boy, howdy do they, Adam. This is just like a scene for like a solid 5 minutes where Data
Rain Man's the craps table.
Yeah, and like they realize that they have like weighted cheater dice when they first start rolling, and so Data like squeezes them real hard in his fist to like rebalance them, and then he's just throwing rocks for the rest of the night.
Yeah, and they win $24 million, right?
Whatever. Like, it's like the purchase price of the hotel plus a little bit for spreading around money, he calls it.
The purchase price of the hotel is a little over $12 million. And Data is really close to that number. And Riker's like, bet it all, man. And Data's like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, I'm going to bet $500 and then we're going to get enough money to buy the hotel. And Riker's like, no, man, bet it all. And so he does, and he wins. And then they buy the hotel for the $12 million, and they, I guess, give the rest of the money away to the people in the hotel?
That's what they're talking about, yeah. They want to spread it around.
That's extremely generous.
Like the general manager's like, we can't pay you the money you've won. And he's like, don't worry, just give us the hotel.
One of Riker's lines is,
when the train comes in, everybody rides.
Which is, like, maybe one of the most sexually threatening things I've ever heard him say on the show. Like, if he had said that to Guinan during game practice a couple episodes ago, I think Guinan just would have hopped over the table onto him at that moment.
Do you think that Riker, when he first set foot in the casino, was like, oh, weird, I was just in this holodeck program?
one of the great scenes to me was so the club is up in the hotel room and they find the dead astronaut. Yeah. And Riker's like, all right, Data and Worf, you guys need to go back to the lobby. I'm gonna stay up and keep checking these hotel rooms. And Data and Worf find that a totally plausible plan.
Yeah. And he's like, leave your ultraviolet lights behind. I'm going to need those.
None of these doors are locked, clearly. So they buy the casino. They're able at that point to leave through the revolving door, and then they get beamed up. That's the end of the episode.
Yep. All is solved. And
total bottle episode.
Totally. Yeah. It just lives in a special place in my heart.
What'd you think?
I mean, it's very dorky and silly, and there is a very bad plot hole in it. But I don't know. It's just like, it's like you've read Save the Cat, I'm sure. The screenwriting manual.
Oh yeah, I have. Yeah. Yeah.
So this is like one of the big books that you read if you want to learn how to write screenplays.
Mm-hmm.
I think the guy's most famous screenplay that wrote it is that one about the kid that gets a blank check. It's just called Blank Check, and he somebody gives him a blank check and he fills it out to cash for $1 million. It actually gets it. And one of the guy's like big things is the promise of the premise, delivering on the promise of the premise. So like if you're going to have a movie about a kid getting a blank check, you're going to show that kid in a crazy mansion with all of the dumb toys that a kid would buy for his crazy mansion. And if you're going to show an android and a sex fiend in a casino in Star Trek, like I feel like this mostly delivers on that. It's just fun to watch like Data throwing dice and like shuffling cards and stuff.
For a guy who's not supposed to have any emotions at all, he seems extremely proud of his good fortune.
Totally. Data's like Data is tiptoeing right up to the line of having actual fun.
I think it really speaks to how good of a person Data is that he chooses to be in Starfleet instead of going to a world where gambling is allowed and actually like has the potential to earn real money. Like he could be a very wealthy person in this galaxy if he made some different decisions.
Right, but that's not what drives Data.
I know. He seeks to better himself, learn about humanity.
What do you seek, Adam?
Yeah, I'm making like the jerk off motion on mic over here. Yeah, he's great. Can't fault him for that.
How about you? What'd you think?
I believe it belongs on Mount Armus with Code of Honor.
I guess this is one we'll have to disagree on. I have like a nostalgic fondness for this one. I don't know why.
Its cheesiness could not redeem it for me.
Royale with you.
That's right.
Also, like, the whole deal with... So the away team beams down, and they're in communication with the ship. They go through the revolving door, and they immediately discover that they can't communicate with the ship. Riker's like, that's cool, let's have a look around a little while longer. Things seem pretty chill here. In this 70s casino on an entirely hostile planet, Riker deems it as not really a threat at that point. Like, whatever, man.
Yeah, and on the ship they're like, well, Riker would have followed procedure and headed back to the beam point if they weren't in trouble.
And Troy's like, yeah, the reason he didn't do that is because he's so amused. Like, yeah. that's a viable reason for him to do that.
Right.
Angelad at Tanagra.
What are the rituals you have in your life? For me, it's a coffee and a dog walk in the morning, a yoga or a Peloton ride after that, a scoop of fiber at night before bed, and at some point in the middle of the day, I take my ritual vitamins, a couple of Essential for Men, and a Symbiotic Plus for gut health. If I can do all those things, I'll feel like I'm doing a good job taking care of my body. Ritual is a science-backed multivitamin with 10 key ingredients. They are rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. Essential for Men is what I take, and it's a quality multivitamin from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month For a limited time at ritual.com/scarves, start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off.
Microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. Now, if you're like me, you were born in the 80s, and THC was vilified by teachers and police officers and members of the clergy and politicians, and it really got ratcheted up to a fever pitch. So I think it is fair to have a little bit of trepidation around this kind of thing. But I think for a lot of people, a microdose of a cannabis product is actually a great thing. And if you are interested in seeing why it is so ridiculous that the world went so reefer mad for so long, I encourage you to give Microdose Gummies a try. So get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Promo code SCARVES. It's available nationwide. That's microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVES for 30% off and free shipping. Microdose.com, promo code SCARVES.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back. What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
Did you find a drunk Shimoda figure in this episode? You gave up the ship to a
child Shimoda. I wrote down Data because of gambling, but then as we were talking about it, I realized that my real drunk Shimoda is Worf for a moment that I'm just chuckling thinking about now, which is where they realize they're trapped and Worf goes and like moves a slot machine aside from a wall and just tries to like push the wall over. And then Riker comes over and he's like, wow, that must be a pretty tough wall. You couldn't even push it through. And then he starts phasering.
Poor Worf in this episode. Like, they couldn't even give him a fun scene where the people are terrified of how he looks. Like, they couldn't even give him that much.
No, it's all just Worf trying to get through various doors and non-doors and having no luck.
It's all or nothing with his exposition. They either give him an entire episode of backstory or he's just
a potted plant.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know. That bummed me out a little bit. They could have really had some fun with him, but they overwrote Data as a result. Like, they could have thrown a little bit at Worf, I thought.
Fair enough.
My Shimoda was Colonel Richie, the dead astronaut. Because I think a lot of people have had the experience of booking a trip to Vegas for just a day too long. And that last day gets real dark.
Yeah.
You know, you outstay a casino.
I mean, the Liberace Museum is not open anymore. So, like, what are we even going to do with that extra day?
Yeah. Like, he stayed at the casino too long, and I cannot imagine staying in a casino hotel for as many years as that guy did. I think that is very clearly a drunk Shimoda decision. on his part to stay there that long. I would have killed myself after 5 days, just as I've considered most times I've gone to Vegas and stayed any longer than four. I think four is your limit in Vegas. Can't do any more than that.
I've only ever been to Vegas for work as an adult, and I've
you had
been
to go
there
to a conference
for like 8 or 9 days at a time, where you like are literally like staying in the hotel that the thing that you're there for is in.
Yeah,
that shit will nuts you up, man.
That's real rough. I have been fortunate enough to not have to endure it that long, but I can't imagine.
Yeah.
Short doses. That's all it's good for.
Mm-hmm.
Colonel Richie found out the hard way.
Yeah, poor guy. R.I.P.
What are we watching for the next episode? What are we watching or vetoing, I should say?
The next episode of The Greatest Generation will cover Season 2, Episode 13, Times Squared. The USS Enterprise discovers a Federation shuttle containing an exact double of Captain Picard from 6 hours in the future. Trying to put a little more stank on my reads of these Amazon descriptions.
Are they going to do that thing where it's a very crudely made split screen as the Picards interact with each other?
Like he hands himself a drink and across like the split screen.
Like Jean-Claude Van Damme in Double Impact. He's the man with the silk underwear. That might be the most narrow 2%er reference ever dropped on this show.
I'll tell you how narrow it is, Adam. I have not seen that one. I've seen a lot of Van Damme, but that's one that I missed.
Did you ever see JCVD?
No, I've heard that's really terrific, though.
It is legitimately terrific. Definitely see it.
Okay.
I don't want to say anything about it until you do, because it would just ruin it. It's awesome. I will not be vetoing Times Squared. I do remember this episode as being a real creep show. There's something a little off about the other Picard. Like when they open up that shuttle and he's in there, he looks like a... I don't know. He looks like a guy in a coma.
Hmm. It's weird. I don't really have any memory of this one. It's a rare one where I don't remember it and you do.
Yeah, I'm into it. Let's watch it.
Okay. We have to talk about this veto poll because we're recording this episode again ahead of when we find the results. But I mean, there's a pretty clear front running option going on right now. Do we want to like decide what our veto policy is going forward, or do we want to save that for the next episode?
Let's decide it and put it to bed now. I have not been current on the poll at all, so this will be a surprise to me.
Okay, so the three options. Option A, keep it the same, which is we each can veto an episode, and if one of us vetoes before the other has used his veto, we can nullify. Option B is book report, where if you veto the episode, you're just vetoing it for yourself. The other person has to watch the show and report back. And option C is book report with a guest, where one of us gets replaced by a special guest when we veto an episode we don't want to watch. And that is the clear leader in the clubhouse. I haven't actually looked at the poll in a bit, but it's like way, way out ahead of the pack when it comes to how people are voting. And I think the runner-up is the second option, the book report option. And a lot of people seem to like the idea that we have our wives on as the special guests.
What is that about?
I don't know. I think they're like curious how a couple of dorkazoids like us managed to trick human females into marrying them.
They actually want proof of life.
Yeah. Yeah. Have your wife on and hold up a current newspaper.
I don't think I'm willing to do that.
No, I'm not.
That is actually, like, the results of this poll are exactly the opposite of my feelings of what we should do.
Well, I think that, you know, like the chain of command on the Enterprise, like, we're not running a democracy here. So while it would be nice if we agreed with the people, it sounds kind of like we don't.
Yeah, I don't. I appreciate everyone's interest.
Yeah.
I had...
It's kind of like we're using a veto, in a way. I mean, not the same veto that we would use on an episode, obviously, but sounds like we're kind of talking about vetoing a popular decision by our listeners.
All right, man, let's keep things as is. I think it works. Why mess with a good thing?
Option A.
Look, I hope this isn't a huge turnoff to a lot of people. I think people were very passionate about what they voted for, and I can appreciate that. However, look, this I can promise you, fair listener, there will be opportunities for guests. Those guests may even be wives, but I don't believe that they are going to occur in the course of regular programming. One of the cool things about joining Max Fun is that they encourage the shows to record special editions of the show during pledge time. And that is something that I think you and I are embracing fully. So I would look for weird special editions to occur maybe even a couple of times a year. But I think during the normal course of the show, I think you should expect things to work as they've worked before.
Right on, Adam. Well, I hope people don't turn on us for this wildly undemocratic decision we've made. But I think the threat of a real veto is kind of a fun thing to live with, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the series.
If you want a Star Trek podcast that respects the voice of the people, maybe go over there to Mission Log, check out their deal.
No, it's all cooked. It's all they're a Roddenberry mouthpiece. It's propaganda, man.
I know. You want the straight dope. You've come to the right place.
This is where it's at.
I am Locutus aboard. You will respond to my questions. I am Locutus aboard. You are Borg.
All right, if you want to talk about this episode or any other, you can find us on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen, and you can find me there at Cut for Time. Ben is at Benjamin R, AHR.
I want to shout out Twitter user Bill Tilly, at Bill Tilly 1973. He's been making like a trading card per episode of our show, like the Greatest Gen Star Trek card collector series, and they're just like the greatest thing ever. Like he's got a card for you, a card for me, a card for Drunk Shimoda, and a bunch of others at this point. I think they're like it's like the coolest thing ever. If you search the Greatest Gen hashtag, you'll see these cards. And
the one he made for the scientist that just says the balls underneath
it's like the funniest thing.
Was laugh out loud funny. I think I don't know where he got the picture for me for my card. I am the least fan of my own personal card, but I am the biggest fan of the balls card. And also the hologram card for Shimoda, like that. Yeah. That is seeing
That's
his face just makes
card.
Me happy.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Bill, for that. We should also thank Dark Materia for the music that we use on our show, and we should thank the kind folks at MaximumFun.org, where our podcast is networked. You can go to MaximumFun.org/donate if you want to support our show. Please do. They made fun of us for how little money people are donating, but we never really promoted the donation part before the last episode. So
we got an email from Jesse Thorne today who said that the amount of money that we've raised for the network is so little that it's not worth him cutting a check to us. So... like, it's an entirely different form of embarrassment that we're in right now.
Yeah.
We thought that this would be a beneficial relationship to everyone. It turns out that we are a parasite.
Yeah, which is not a good look for us. So if you have any hope for our show staying on this network, which is like literally a dream come true for both of us, please go donate.
Yeah, even a dollar will make sure that we are fed and housed. And housed is the way I should say that. God, I'm so full of Sudafed. All right, we'll see you next time. on.
Yeah, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, and also this.
Just another car crash of an ending.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.